Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Growth Matters Radio.
Well, good morning. I'm Michelle Matthews, and here we are for another Growth Matters show. And I know whether you're a woman, a man, early in your career, doing a restart to career, wherever you are, I think that these two ladies that I have with me this morning are really going to give you some food for thought, and I'm really excited about the show. So today we have Becky Blaylock. Many of you may know her in her previous life as the former SVP and CIO of Southern Company. And if you are on Facebook and have an Atlanta network, you know that she is an author of a great book called Dare. And she's also the managing partner of Advisory Capital, and we'll give her an opportunity to share a little more about both of those topics. Welcome, Becky.
Well, thank you, Michelle. I look forward to being with you.
Yeah, and then we have Helene Lawless. And again, if you're in the Atlanta community, you may be familiar with her company, Path Builders. So Helene is partner and president of that organization, and they really are a group that focuses on developing the potential of high-performing women, and really helping organizations sort of navigate through that challenge of gender diversity. So, Helene, glad to have you here this
morning. Thrilled to be here with both of you ladies this morning.
Yeah, so I would like each of you to kind of share what I call the nickel tour of sort of your background and your experience so that our listeners can have that as context as we talk about some of the things that you're doing now. So, Becky, I'll start with you.
Well, I spent 33 years in corporate America at one of America's most respected companies, Southern Company, and had a variety of jobs while I worked for them. I actually started off in accounting and finance, moved into business development, worked in as a lobbyist for a short period of time, and then moved into IT, spent the last decade of my career running the information technology organization. Retired from Southern Company 2.5 years ago, started my own business, so I know what it's like to be an entrepreneur now, and also decided I wanted to write a book and leave behind some of my lessons learned coming up the corporate ladder. And the book came out in October and has since been named a bestseller by 800 CEO Reads, so it's doing quite well.
Well, congratulations. Before I let Helene share a little bit about her experience, can you tell our listeners, you know, with all of that background, not everybody writes a book. Really, what was the impetus that you really felt you wanted to do that give back for our community?
You know, there are not that many leadership books written by women who are practitioners. There are a lot of leadership books that have been written by men who are former CEOs who have, you know, reached success in their careers, but just not that many women, because there aren't that many women who have reached the C-suite. That's going to change a lot in the coming years. And so I felt very compelled to sit down and put down on paper, and I was fortunate enough to get picked up by a big publisher, Jossie Bass, which is owned by Wiley Publishing, published the book, and have had tremendous success with it. I tell people I felt very called to do this. I've had many blessings in my career. A lot of people supported me and helped me along the way, and I wanted this to be my give back to others and hopefully help them be successful in their careers, because I think there isn't anything you can't do if you put your mind to it.
Great, great. So, Helene, tell us a little bit about your experience and background.
Sure. So I began my career as an engineer. So my degrees are in engineering, and I worked for Amoco and then BP Corporations for about 13 years. And like Becky, was incredibly fortunate to do a number of different things. So spent some time in R&D, spent some time in product development, marketing, strategic planning, and mergers and acquisitions. And very long story short, when I decided to leave, I had an opportunity to purchase a small business together with two of my partners. And my corny part of the story is this organization is an organization that Amoco had sent me to be a mentee in a mentoring program. And quite frankly, the experience changed my life and changed my career, as it did a an incredible number of women, and the organization was facing some challenges, and three of us decided we couldn't let it go away. So quite frankly, knowing nothing about small business ownership, three of us decided to buy the business. And gosh, that was 11 years ago. So we have certainly changed our scope and our focus, and really work with organizations to develop women at four key stages in their careers so that they are understanding that transition between becoming a professional to being a manager to leading an organization to really getting to that point where you inspire others around you. And it's unbelievably rewarding work.
Yeah, so I'll have to just put in my own little story here that I was sharing with Helene. I actually went through the program as a mentee, and I've been a mentor with your program, but I was a mentee, and Joanne Bauer from Kimberly Clark was my mentor, and she actually helped me think about leaving Accenture at the time and starting Matthews Consulting Group. So I really understand the power of some of the things you ladies are talking about, because as an entrepreneur and as someone that was in corporate America, some of these principles are things I like to think sometimes I can implement, but certainly are things that can help. So even before we, Becky, talk a little bit about the book and sort of how it's organized and some of the, you know, key principles, we'll get into that. I want to ask both of you a question. And last night I was fortunate, those that have been part of the listening audience know I'm a Spelman grad. I always find a way to put that in. And Dr. Beverly Tatum, who was in your book,
absolutely,
was hosting a leadership conversation with Ingrid Saunders-Jones, who is a former executive of the Coca-Cola Company, and now she's the chairperson for the National Council of Negro Women. But Dr. Tatum asked a question, and I'm going to steal it because I thought it was really appropriate. When did you know, Becky, that you actually were a leader?
You know, I'll tell you, the first experience I had with leadership and knowing that you can make a difference was when I was in, oddly enough, the fifth grade. I lived in Kansas at the time, and girls were not allowed to wear pants to school. That's how old I am. And in Kansas, it gets very cold in the wintertime. And I had to ride the bus to school, as did many of my friends. And so one day, I got a bunch of my girlfriends together, and I said, you know what? Let's wear pants to school tomorrow and see what happens. It's going to be really cold. And so I convinced eight of my friends to wear pants to school the next day. We all wore pants to school, and we all got promptly marched down to the principal's office. These weren't blue jeans. These were nice dress pants. And the principal sent all of us home. But while we were in his office, we explained to him that it was cold, that we were having to stand outside and wait for the bus, and that we felt like it was not fair that girls could not wear pants. The next day, they changed the rules. Wow. And said that if the temperature reached a certain threshold, that girls were allowed to wear pants. And that really opened my eyes up to the fact that if you get round up your girlfriends and you take a stand on things, you can make a difference.
What a great, great story. And it really lives out kind of that principle of you are able to differentiate yourself and become your own best advocate, which was one of the principles in your book. So Helene, Ingrid also defined leadership as getting people to go from one place to another and like it. And kind of Becky, that's what you were talking about. So Helene, when did you know that you were and are a leader?
I mean, it's, Becky has such a fabulous story. It made me think of a story that I will share, a story that my mother shared with me. So one day I was just expressing appreciation to her for somehow something she and my dad did just always let me know that I could do or be whatever it is I wanted to be. And I will never forget, my mother said to me, she told a story about when I was in kindergarten and how she and dad showed up for like the little kindergarten show thing and how they were so massively embarrassed because apparently each segment began with, and now Helene will lead the children in a song, and now Helene will lead the percussion group. And she tells this story about going home and she and my dad looking at each other and saying, what are we going to do with her? She doesn't seem to be afraid of anything. And it was so heartwarming for me to hear that that had even been, of course, you know, I had no concept. I was just doing what I did, but I will never forget my mom saying that to me.
Wow, those are two great stories, starting my day off with really a smile, because I think as you learn about leaders, as you learn about their journey, hearing their stories, whether those are personal or professional, really help to inspire people. So I really appreciate both of you sharing. So Becky, sort of talk to us a little bit about the book and kind of its emphasis and kind of give us a general theme.
Okay. Well, the book is not just my story and about my journey, but I also captured the stories and the lessons learned of 28 other very highly successful women, you know, many different industries, many different personalities, but all extremely successful women. And so I think it's very powerful in terms of the lessons it learns behind. But there's three key messages. The first one really starts with, you got to dare to begin within. You need to really understand what it is that you want. And that message really comes from the fact that I mentored a lot of men and women in my career. And I was, you know, really dismayed, because more often than not, it was the women who, when I would ask them, what is it that you want? Their response would be, I don't know. People can mentor you and coach you and help you in a lot of ways, but they can't figure out what it is that you want for you. So the first portion of the book is all about that, you know, knowing what you want and understanding who you are. The second part of the book is about taking risks, being willing to get outside of your comfort zone. You know, we so let ourselves get paralyzed by a fear of failure. And we do that because our confidence is not always where it needs to be. Everybody suffers with self-confidence, but it's really much more prevalent among women. And the reason that it's so is because women don't have the same social safety net inside corporations that men do. And that's where Helene was very helpful to me in writing this book, because the third part of the book is about giving back and mentoring. And Helene has got such a tremendous depth of experience around mentoring, with the experiences that she's had with people. And so I've got some of my own stories in there, stories from other women, but Path Builders was very helpful to me and how we crafted the last part of the book about mentoring and giving back, because in order to get, you have to give.
Yeah.
And when people get to those senior levels, sometimes they forget that there were people that helped them along the way. And I really wanted to encourage people to be willing to reach back and bring this next generation along. One of the stories that Helene shared with me that's in the book that I think is just so indicative, and I could just go on and on about the times I have mentored and how it ended up benefiting me. But she said that they had a group mentoring process, and one of the executive women who was the leader of the group, she was the mentor, and she had this group of mentees. They were all complaining about their bosses. And I've never asked you, Helene, what it was that they were complaining about, but they were just going on and on and on about how this one thing that their bosses did held them back. And she sat there and she listened to them talk, and she said, oh my gosh, I'm doing that. I've got to go back and change my behavior and not do that. And that's what happens with mentoring, is you learn things. So many of the people that I have mentored, younger people, are now coming back and helping me with social media, because you have to do social media if you have a book. I'll just share one other example with you. About 18 months ago, I got a call from a young woman here in Atlanta who was working for one of the newspapers. And she said, you know, I am really struggling trying to meet people in the business community here. And somebody said that, you know, I need to spend some time with you. And I thought, oh, my God, I got 50 million things going on. I really don't have time to do this, but I'll do it. So I sat down, I had a cup of coffee with her, and I said, you know what? I said, I'm going to a couple of events. Why don't you just come go with me, and I'll introduce you to some people. You know, really no work, extra work on my part. She was just coming with me and hanging out with me. So I did that. I introduced her to some people. She met some people. She said it was the most powerful thing anybody could have done for her. And then we kept in touch periodically. And about 4 months ago, she called me and she said, you know, my husband's being transferred to Seattle. I would like to keep in touch with you. I know you have the book coming out. Well, she gets out to Seattle and gets a job working for Forbes magazine. And she calls me and says, I want to do a story on your book. So my book has now been in Forbes twice, and she has done a tremendous amount around social media. So here I thought I was doing something to help her, and yet it has come back to me tenfold. And that is what happens consistently with mentoring. If you help others, they come back and help you.
Yeah. You know, as you were talking about that, I think this whole idea of that giving back and paying it forward, sometimes we as women, you know, we're a little worried that if we do that, will that, come back and that somebody will know more information than we do or be put in a spot that maybe we want. But what you're really saying is, you know, don't so much focus on what you think might happen as a result of that. Just be generous with your time and your willingness to learn and do those kinds of things, and it'll come back. So, Helene, you do a lot of work with the whole mentoring process and helping women achieve their goals. Kind of what say you on following up to what Becky talked about with her story?
You know, so often what we will find, and we create a lot of cross-company environments. So the story that Becky shared, particularly powerful. So a mentor, mentees from three different companies, all different than her own. There is a safety that can be created in that environment that sometimes is hard to capture. And you can capture it internally. It just takes a different focus on really making it clear that, you know, mentoring is about letting the relationship go where it goes. Doesn't mean you don't provide structure around it, but creating some space for that. One of the things that is always so interesting to me, so working with women at various levels, we bring those individuals in as mentors for individuals earlier in their careers, and so really creating a mentoring continuum. And one of the things that's always so interesting to me, when we take a woman who may be director level in her organization and say, you know, now it's time for you to start mentoring some new managers, so often the first instinct will be, I just don't know if I have anything to give them, or I'm still learning and growing myself. And we will assure them that it's our job to make sure that we're matching them with mentees who really literally need what they have. And it is so unbelievably rewarding when you see those matches come together and this new mentor approaches us and has this aha moment around, they actually are in a place that I know, and I was in that place, and the things that I can share are meaningful to them. And I do, I think it's perhaps one of the best compliments we've ever received, but an amazing woman here in town that I'm sure some of your listeners know, Denise Billups, the executive with IBM. Yeah, Denise shared one day that one of the things that she thinks is so powerful about our matching process is that if you're matched well, you can show up and just be.
Hmm.
And what it is that she brings, it isn't this, I need to do research in all of these different areas and think about what it is this mentee needs, but the questions that the mentee asks are the questions that the mentor is best positioned to answer. And it's just, when you see that happen, it's so unbelievably powerful.
Yeah, Becky, I want to maybe take each of the sort of three key points that you talked about. And even before I do that, I want to let our listeners know that if you go and pick up the book, Dare, one of the things that I found very refreshing about it is it is very conversational in that people are telling their stories, and I think that that is very powerful versus sort of the theoretical way to approach this. But at the end of each chapter, I like how you highlighted some things that allows people to sort of do a checklist that kind of reinforces some of your comments. So I just want to put that out there that I found the book really easy to digest, so to speak, and that I think it would also be a really easy tool to keep right at hand because you're able to go back and easily find things. Was that intentional, Becky?
Yes, that was very intentional. I wanted not just to tell stories, but I wanted to give people some actual action things that they could do, things that really are not all that complicated. They're not rocket scientists. They're just common sense kinds of things that if we will do them, they will help us be more successful. And I don't care who you are. We all need reminders. I'll just give you this one example. One of the things I tell people is that there are really four things you need to do when you're trying to build a relationship or when you meet somebody for the first time. The first one is just to smile. Mm-hmm. You know, a smile is a universal language that says that you're approachable. But so many times we've got a million things we're thinking about, and we don't even think about putting that smile on our face. You know, the second thing is your handshake. So many women have this terrible limp fish handshake, and that communicates about you and how powerful you are and confident you are.
Or not. Yes.
Or not, absolutely. the other thing is to make eye contact. You know, we tend to not want to look somebody directly in the eye, and that communicates that you're not being truthful with somebody if you're not willing to look them in the eye. And then the fourth thing, and this is something that I was really shocked recently because I've been doing a lot of public speaking and somebody videotaped me and I went back and looked and I thought, oh my gosh, I'm not doing that. And it's posture.
Yeah.
Walking and standing up, not only does it just make you feel more confident, but you look a lot more confident when you will stand up straight. So they're just simple, easy things like that that are reminders, things that we all need to stay focused on. The other thing is that I also have a website now that goes with the book, because a lot of the focus in the book is around taking risk and being more confident. And confidence is a learned skill, just like public speaking and just like leadership. Most people are not born knowing how to do those things. And confidence is the same way. What you have to do is be willing to stretch outside your comfort zone every day. So I have a confidence quiz that you can go and take online that will tell you, do you need some work in this area? Mm-hmm. And if so, there's just a little checklist of tips. And all of that has been validated by Dr. Peter Buckley, who's the head of psychiatry for Georgia Regents University. And he says that if people will just practice these things on a routine basis, it will help them be more confident in everything they do in their lives. And I think that that's one of the great things that does hold women back. Not that men don't struggle with confidence, mm-hmm. too, but again, they have the safety nets that we don't. And that's why the mentoring and the sponsorship are so important, because if you have a mentor, if you have somebody that you can call and talk to about things, just that alone can boost your confidence.
Yeah, it looks like, Colleen, you have some.
Well, to me, just even listening to Becky say mm-hmm. that is indicative of what I think is so powerful about the book, that it combines both big ideas with practical application. So, you know, you talked about the mechanics of the networking piece, but I also love how Becky positions that you really should rethink your network as this vibrant and agile resource of expertise, and building that network in a way that you stay smarter because you're so connected and interconnected with a variety of mind thought leaders in all of their areas. So while there's this big idea around redesigning your whole approach to networking, there are also just these, I joked with her about this so many times. There is one thing that one sentence I read in the book, and the second I finished reading the sentence, I thought, well, I am going to start doing that tomorrow. So one of her comments was, when you're in a meeting and you don't understand what's actually going on, and you feel reticent to say, I'm sorry, I don't understand, for fear that it would reflect negatively on you, just change your language to say, that is so interesting. I would like to learn more about that.
Great.
And I thought, oh my gosh, I will start doing that tomorrow. That is fabulous.
And I think both of you are really on to something, and something that our listening audience, as you're thinking about how to incorporate this, really needs to think about. I work with a lot of leaders around, you know, helping them achieve their objectives and grow professionally, and they're trying to accomplish big things in organizations. And so that idea of understanding what that big thing is, but breaking it down into something that is easy for people to understand and implement kind of in the moment, is I think a lot of times where we have challenges with bringing change either into our own lives or into an organization, because we make it It is complex, but we're not able to simplify it. And because it is radio, you're not able to see when Becky gave her last point about posture and sitting up straight. All three of us shifted our posture, and it's just that reminder that it's the little things that really can make a difference. So I really would be interested, Becky, if you'd be willing to tell us as a personal experience, if we go back and we unpack that sort of dare to begin with the end in mind, can you give us an example or an experience where you kind of had that, and then I like to use the term make yourself helpable. By being able to articulate that, then you were able to have people surround you to help you get to that end.
You know, I had been working in corporate America for about 12 years, and was on a very successful track in accounting and finance. My undergraduate degree was in marketing. I had an MBA in finance, but I realized this just isn't what I want to do. And I had interviewed for a job inside my company that was the assistant to the SVP of marketing. And I didn't have any marketing experience, but I had a good reputation, and I was a candidate against five other people, and the feedback I got back was, boy, she seems like a really smart person, but I'm not sure she has the interpersonal skills to come in and do marketing. I thought, well, that's what I am. I'm more an interpersonal skill person than anything else. I thought, I've really got a challenge here. So I thought, I'm going to have to do something to change this perception of me. And I started looking around the company at the jobs in the marketing organization, and I really wanted to go to work in our economic development organization. I was fascinated by the work that they did. And so I picked up the phone and called a friend of mine who worked in that area, and I said, what can you tell me? He said, well, you need to come over and you need to have lunch with the manager. So I went over, and he arranged for me to have lunch with the manager, and the manager said, we are never going to have a woman do economic development. You have to understand, this was the early 80s. He said, women can't do this kind of work. He said, you have to entertain people, take other men out to dinner at night, and it just would not be appropriate to have a woman in this job. Well, I was pretty discouraged, but the good news is about 6 months later, he retired, and they had a new person come in. So I called my friend up again, and I said, you know, is the new person more open to having a woman? And he said, yes. So I went to lunch with this new supervisor, and he said, you know, I'd really love to have a woman here. The state of Georgia has just hired two women to do economic development, and they're doing quite well. And he
said, imagine that.
Oh, I know. Imagine that. They were blowing the doors off. So because the state now had two women and the Atlanta Chamber had one woman doing economic development, they were thinking, well, maybe we need to have one. But he told me, he said, unfortunately, he said, this would be a two-level demotion for you from the level that you're at. And our company didn't have developmental moves at the time. But I had decided I was either going to have to leave the company or do something very drastic to change my career, and that this was what I really wanted to do. So they had a job that came open. I posted for it. I interviewed, and I got it. And I held my breath and just said, I leapt out there and took the job. I had a lot of support from my husband, fortunately, to do that. But I totally alienated myself from my former boss. You know, when you look back in hindsight, are there things you would do differently? I didn't tell him I was putting my name in the hat and interviewing for the job, and he thought that I was really off my rocker. He said, why in the world would you leave this area where you have a tremendous career and go off into that area? And because in those days, people came up their functional silos and didn't leave, and as a VP, he tried to hang on to his most talented people. He was furious with me. He didn't speak to me for 2 years after that. Wow. And so I go into this job where I feel like this is where I fit. But I have to tell you, the first 2 months I was in that job, I thought, what have I done? And every day I would go home and tell my husband, I have just ruined my career. You know, I may just have to leave this company because I don't know what I'm doing. I went from a world of talking about return on equity to talking about square footage and infrastructure. But I was very patient, you know, and just tried to come in every day and learn as much as I could. People were very welcoming to me. It was almost a novelty. The two women at the state could not wait to meet me. Mm-hmm. They said, you have just cracked the strongest bastion of male dominance in the state of Georgia, and we want to meet you, and we want to do everything we can to help you. And they stayed very true to that. And I ended up having a tremendous amount of success in that job. And part of what helped me is that I had a strong financial background. I knew how to put together a deal with incentives, and nobody else in the department did. Because I got a lot of exposure outside the company in the community, the CEO started hearing my name. And he said, who is this person working for our company? I keep hearing great things about her. And that actually is what launched my career, was taking that two-level demotion and going into that job. The job I had been in got downgraded. The job I was in got upgraded. And then I got promoted. And kind of the rest is history. But sometimes you have to do those things. You've got to get out of that comfort zone, take those risks, and learn new things in order to be more qualified to move up the ladder.
Yeah, and I love that part of the principle of DARE, and just the fact that that's the title, right?
Right.
It combines some of the things that we've heard about, you know, have a vision for where you're going to go, right. Know the end in mind. But I think what you've done is you've coupled that. You can have that, but what that also means is that you have to be willing to take risk, and you have to be willing to stay within what is purposeful for you, and know that if you take that risk and you do some of these other things, then, you know, whether it turns out to be this total success or it just gives you a segue into something else, that it's going to be meaningful. So, Helene, let's take the second principle, which is a good kind of segue about risk and getting out of your comfort zone, but I'm going to flip it a little bit. Has there ever been a situation that you've had where you took a risk, at the time it didn't go the way that you thought it would, and maybe that there's a lesson that you learned so that you keep getting out there and taking risks going forward, but this particular one just didn't pan out and how you dealt with it?
Wow, how I didn't have something that didn't pan out. Well, I mean, I'll go back to something that ultimately turned around, but I kind of went through that period that Becky's talking about. So when BP acquired Amoco, it was really just a matter of time before there wasn't going to be much infrastructure on the ground in the Atlanta area. And our industry was going through a lot of consolidation. And I had had the benefit of being in the position to write our business unit strategic plan, kind of looking ahead 5 years. And we were in a commodity industry that had 14 players, way too many players for a commodity. And so as a result, we were at a point where the industry really needed to start consolidating. And I was very fortunate that having spent time in R&D and product management and product development and technology, that I had a really good sense for all of our competitors and who was going to win and who was going to lose. And so it was time for the industry to start consolidating, and so we were going to be doing that by acquisition. And so I did feel fully equipped to put together the strategy around that, how that should be done. And then the day came where they flipped the switch and said, okay, we're going to start buying a couple of those competitors. Can you take on managing the commercial aspects of due diligence and integration? Oh, my. No. And I remember having that emotion of really being comfortable in the behind-the-scenes role of strategizing what that needed to look like. And the learning for me was around how often, and it's tough because these three blur together to a certain extent. The learning for me was that I didn't value what the organization actually recognized that I had. So I thought, I don't have expertise in merger acquisition. What I didn't realize was the most important thing in a project like that is actually your network. And I had been in the business unit for 12 years, and because I knew the guys in manufacturing, I knew what our market position was, I knew our competitors' technology, in retrospect, I now understand why they selected me to do that work. But at the time, I remember thinking, I've never even read a book about M&A. I'm not in any position. And actually, for the first couple of months on the project, I remember like spending time on the internet thinking, there must be books that just give me the checklist, right, of the things that I need to be paying attention to. What I realize, though, now in retrospect, and it's probably why I'm as passionate as I am today, looking back, the organization recognized that that network was the power that I needed to actually get things done. And I didn't value that myself. And so what seemed like this enormous risk to me, I now see that my leadership recognized that there really wasn't that much risk. There were an incredible number of people who would come around me and support me through that process.
Before we talk a little bit about that last principle about giving back, and it's tied in with the mentoring, I want to get both of your point of view about the importance and the difference between sponsorship and mentorship, because a lot of times people get both of those confused. So kind of, Becky, give us your point of view about sort of the difference and how maybe a story in the book plays it out.
Well, there is a big difference, and you need both. A sponsor is much harder to get, and I don't think I would have really understood what a sponsor was had I not been in a senior position inside a company where I sat around a table and we were trying to make the decision about who was going to get a senior job in the company. Because the higher up the ladder you go, those jobs are not, decisions are not made by one person. They're typically made by a selection committee. And everybody comes into those selection committees with their own favorite person on the list. And if you don't have a sponsor, somebody who's willing to speak up and advocate on your behalf, first of all, your name never even gets on the list. If you have a sponsor, they're going to make sure that your name's on the list and you're getting considered for jobs that you're qualified for. But the other thing is that everybody comes into those meetings with their own person that they want to advocate for. It's not necessarily that they don't want you for the job, but they've got their own person that they're trying to get positioned. you know, the example I'll give you is when I was a candidate for the CIO job at Southern Company. And I only know about this because little tidbits were told to me afterwards, but there were like seven people that they were considering for the job. And there were a couple of people who sat around the table and said, well, you know, this is a large team of people. This is 1,400 people. She's never managed a team that large. You know, we'd be taking a lot of risk to put her in there. But fortunately, there were, you know, four other people who'd worked directly with me and said, look, we've worked with her. We know that it doesn't matter if there's 20,000 people. She can handle the job. And had they not been willing not only just to, you know, have my name on the list, but advocate for me, I would never have gotten that job. So you've got to have somebody who believes passionately in you and who's willing to speak up on your behalf. And some of that is that you've got to educate those people too. I mean, you have to, I mean, if you are fortunate enough to have somebody who has a seat at the table, a decision-making seat at the table, you need to keep in touch with that person and let them know what it is that you want.
Yeah, and before we sort of talk about mentoring and juxtaposed it, if you were going to give some advice to a young woman in her career, because sponsorship is not as easy as, you know, you don't go up to somebody and say, will you be my sponsor? What are two or three things you might tell them to help get them positioned so that somebody will want to be their sponsor?
Well, first of all, look across your company and see who the talented people are that it looks like are going to move into some senior level jobs. And I tell people, choose your boss. Be as strategic about choosing your boss as you are about choosing your next job, because it's better to take a job. It may not be your dream job, but if it teaches you something new and you're working for somebody who is a proven leader, what a great opportunity for you to work with somebody like that and learn from them. And as they go up the ladder, if you've got a proven track record of success with them, chances are they're going to be pretty good about looking out for you and being a sponsor for you. So that's one way you can be pretty strategic about it. A lot of companies now do have some programs where they will match you up. The other thing is be strategic about your mentor. Maybe it's not your boss. Maybe it's your mentor who's somebody who's on a fast track. They may not be there yet, but it's somebody that you think is an aspiring leader, and it's somebody who has a proven track record of helping support and bring other people along. And ask them when they're, you know, when you think they're a rising star to be your mentor. You know, one of the things I think is a challenge for women is we don't like to ask for help. Mm-hmm. Men are shameless. They're shameless about coming in and telling you wonderful things that they have accomplished and done. A woman can win a very significant award, and she will not even come in and tell you when you're her boss. And so you've got to be much better about asking for what it is that you want and educating people about the things that you bring to the table. You can't assume that people know great things about you. And if you don't want to toot your own horn, if you find that offensive, as most of us do, it's very hard for us to toot our own horn. Go find a friend and get them to do it for you.
Yeah.
And y'all can have a tit for tat where, hey, I'll go take care of you if you take care of me.
Yeah.
You know, and making sure people know what I've done. One of the things I used to do, and I know this is a little off our subject, but just because I think this is a good tip, when I had people that reported to me that did significant things, I always wrote a letter to my boss and said, hey, you know, Jane on my team just did the most phenomenal thing. And she's great. And then I would copy her on it. So it made Jane know that, you know, gosh, I like working for Becky because she's really making sure that I get credit for what I do. And it would really motivate her. And the boss says, gosh, great things are happening with that team down there. And, hey, I'm leading that team. So, you know, you're kind of bragging on yourself when you do that.
Yeah. So, Helene, before you talk about mentoring, actually you said it's off a little off track. But I really think it isn't, because I think it goes back to your point about the little things that you can do to position yourself and to be a good leader, and doing those kinds of things then always positions you to go forward. So that's another great tip to our listeners to think about.
Well, the other thing too, Michelle, is that I think we're in an era where you used to have these queen bees. You know, let's face it, some of the historical women who rose to leadership in corporate America were not necessarily people that women today want to be or even really liked. I think they felt like the only one was going to get through, and they, you know, would have their foot on the next person's head coming up the ladder. That's not who's going to be successful today. And Catalyst has done a lot of research around this, that if you want to be successful, you better be a person who's helping other people be successful. Mm-hmm. There is a lot more room than for just one woman at the top.
Yeah, great advice. So, Helene, share with us a little bit about sort of your definition or Pathbuilder's definition of mentoring and how that contrasts with the idea of sponsorship.
Sure. And I completely agree with Becky. I mean, they, excuse me, are very different, mentoring and sponsorship. You know, for us, mentoring is about a relationship. And mentoring is a relationship where it's an intense sharing of experiences. It's just a sharing of experiences in within the context of the mentee's goals. And so, as Becky said, you do have to know what you want. A great mentee has goals and has thought processes around what it is that they're trying to achieve, but then they enter into a relationship where the two share experiences. We often say that mentors, a great mentor pokes you in the side, doesn't pat you on the head. And unfortunately, studies show that when we go after our own mentors with no malintent whatsoever, we happen to gravitate to the folks that are going to pat us on the head more than the folks that are going to poke us in the side. And so it's just so important to find those people who are really going to challenge you. I echo, though, there is a difference between mentoring and sponsorship, and we say it actually quite simply. The mentor does their job while you're in the room together, and the sponsor does his or her job when you're not in the room. An incredible number of decisions about your career get made when you are not in the room, and it is around having that advocate who understands you and can speak on your behalf. I will tell you, I think there are tremendous programs inside organizations for mentoring. I get a little skittish when I hear about a sponsorship program, only because, in my view, I think it's incredibly difficult to create a sponsorship match. And to answer the same question you asked Becky around how do you find sponsors, you find sponsors by looking at individuals and saying, can I work with you? Is there a project that you need some help and support on? I would really like to be a part of that work. And it's much more about that individual seeing you in action and recognizing what it is that you're really capable of so that they understand what you're capable of. Where it's very different. I mean, a mentoring relationship, it's about being completely open and vulnerable, and here are the things that I'm good at and here are the real challenges that I face. And so as a result, it takes a special person to be both a mentor and a sponsor to you. It can happen, but I think it's more of a rarity. I think often you have different mentors than you do sponsors.
And I'm curious, in both of your research and the work that you do around mentoring, do you advocate for people to have multiple mentors? Talk about kind of the role versus, I don't know if you call it a mentoring network or et cetera. Both of you are nodding your head.
I mean, we feel that it's critically important to have mentors all around you. Mentors inside your organization, mentors outside of your organization. Becky said it earlier, but it isn't always necessarily individuals who are more senior than you. A tremendous amount you can learn from individuals younger or less experienced. So I do think there are opportunities to tap into those insights all around you, but don't confuse network and mentoring, right? It's important we have those relationships all around us. I mean, mentoring is more focused on some continuity. To us, a mentoring relationship, I'm often challenged when I see those concepts of like one-minute mentoring. Mentoring is about a generative process where
investment.
Yes, investment's a great word. And there's a circle back component of, I tried that thing we talked about last month. It worked or it didn't work. Let's fine tune that. But again, I think it's about having those perspectives around you and not just in one place.
Yeah, I used to practice something called reverse coaching, and that's actually where people two or three levels down in the organization used to come and mentor me. I went into IT, which is a highly technical organization, and I did not have the technical background. So the folks that did our strategic planning and who looked at all the new technologies that were coming at least once a month, I sat down with them, and they coached me and mentored me and taught me things that I needed to know about the technical side of the business. And it was highly effective for me. The other thing about it, about that is I think word got across the organization that I was really trying to, that I wasn't a technical expert, but I was really trying to learn the content of what was there, and really made employees appreciate the fact that I was trying to learn what was going on.
And when you said that, what came to me is that really I think if you think of people that you see in leadership position and you try to say, you know, who are the ones that really I want to emulate, you just maybe unintentionally gave one of the things I think is really important, because you talk about confidence. So you have to have that confidence. You talked about going to your website and getting that assessment. But then I think sometimes as leaders we think we have to know the answers, and that confidence is synonymous with never being vulnerable and never asking for help. And what you just demonstrated in that story to our listeners is that as a leader, you do have to be confident. You do have to know what you don't know, but you have to be willing to ask for that help, and you have to do that in a way that's not abrasive, but it's you can walk that tightrope. And sometimes that is a challenge, so I appreciate that lens in which you've shared.
You know, I share a story with you sort of along those lines, Michelle. When I first went into IT, it wasn't a job that I had been looking for. A CEO came to me and said, you should take this position. And it was the first time I had been in a job where I really did not know much about the technical side of the business. I was very uncomfortable being there. But I wasn't uncomfortable around talking to people and being around the people in the organization. These were some of the smartest people I've ever worked with. And I had worked with a young woman. She had worked for me in accounting. And when she heard I was in IT, she applied for and came to work in IT. And after I'd been in that job for about 6 months, she came up to me one day and she said, you know, she said, you're a better leader in IT than you were in accounting. Mm. And I said, how in the world can you possibly think that? I said, I feel like I walk around on a daily basis not knowing so much about this part of the business. She said, that was the problem in accounting. She said, you built many of the systems that we had. And she said, there was a real tendency for you to micromanage everything we did. She said, you can't do that here because you don't know how to do this. She said, so you ask a lot of questions. And she said, and you know that it's all about who you surround yourself with. And she said, and you challenge us and motivate us to do more. And she said, I think this has been a great career move for you. And it was the first time it dawned on me that, you know, really leadership is not about being the subject matter expert. It's about who you surround yourself with and really how you motivate those people on your team. Because we live in a day and age when nobody can know it all.
Yeah, very, very insightful. And it circles back to something that both of you shared at the top of the hour about your careers that I thought about but didn't even go down that path, is there is something beneficial if you truly want to move higher in leadership to have different experiences. And a lot of people that sit in your seats and come and talk to us at Growth Matters can talk about their experience and how they've had multiple things. Before we talk about your last principle about giving back, and we've talked a little bit about that, I want to again, go and have you share, Becky, as you wrote this book and as you listened to the stories, what did anything surprise you? Was there something that you were like, that's an aha for me, or I didn't expect that?
You're talking about in the interviews with the 28
women.
Yeah,
just the process of actually writing the book, because I'm sure it was a developmental opportunity.
It was quite the developmental opportunity. I'm telling you, saying you're going to write a book and doing it are two different things. Yeah. I learned a lot. I now understand why people can do, you know, multiple books and why you should do multiple ones, because the first one is so much harder than any of the other ones that will follow, because you learn so many lessons along the way. I didn't realize that really a publisher doesn't want a manuscript. They want a marketing proposal, because they're going to give you a lot of feedback about what they want in the document. I got to tell you, I was very proud of myself. I did learn that you do have to stay true to yourself and really push back. I got in one phase of the book, the publisher wanted to make yet more changes in direction on the book, and I just put my foot down and I said, I don't think I can write a book that's going to make you happy. And I said, I think we need to cancel the contract. And it took me getting to that point for them to say, oh my goodness, no, we don't want to cancel the contract. Mm-hmm. What can we do to compromise and work this out? And so it was more validation for my own, you know, you got to stand your ground sometimes if you see things happening that are not in line with, you know, your values. Because I'm the one that has to get out and speak to this book. It can't be anything other than my voice and what I really believe. I will say I do think it's a much better product because Wiley was involved and because they did give me advice and guidance. They're the ones that said, we want more other people's voices in here. So it was a lot of work to go out and interview 28 highly successful women. But the other thing that was pretty enlightening to me, every one of those 28 women talked about the fact that things are not where they need to be today in corporate America, and things need to change. And they were so gracious in giving back and supporting me in this book, because they felt like it was an opportunity to get their voice out there and to continue to push for helping women be more courageous and be willing to take more risk. Every single one of them, nobody said, well, you know, I really don't understand why we need to do this, because there are no issues today. We're there. No, they all talked about it. Some said, you know, I can't be as candid as I'd like to be in your book because I'm still working for this company, which I could completely understand and had to be respectful of. The other thing that I think was a little eye-opening is they all said that if they could change one thing, what they would like to have done in their careers earlier was take more risk, be willing to get out of that comfort zone. They talked about how important mentorship is, that, you know, you're much more willing to get out of that comfort zone if you've got a mentor that's behind you. Many of them talked about the fact that one of the biggest mistakes they'd made was not firing somebody quick enough. I thought that was pretty eye-opening. I think this plays to the fact that women so want to be liked. Men want to be liked too, but not as much as women, and we will tend to, you know, almost derail ourselves trying to help somebody else. But they all looked back and said, you know, I should have moved quicker. I had somebody on my team who wasn't performing. They almost dragged the whole team down, and I didn't do it. The other pretty eye-opening thing was when I asked them if you could go back in time and change something, what would it be? And most of them said nothing.
Okay.
But what they would change was maybe how they did things. Mm-hmm. Not what they did, but how. That they sometimes had not been as sensitive, had maybe not listened and gotten enough facts up front. Ultimately felt like they had done the right things and made the right decisions, but maybe could have been a little more courteous to women. Oddly enough, I also interviewed a lot of men for this book, and I asked them, I said, if you could change one thing about women, what would it be? The most common thing that came out is quit taking it personal. They said, you know, women tend to get their feelings hurt, so they said, you know, we won't be candid with them. We won't give them feedback and tell them the things they need to work on because they take it too personally. And they need, you know, said they need to lighten up a little bit and have more fun in the workplace. And, you know, I wanted to say, well, that's easier to say than it is to do. It's hard to lighten up and be one of the guys, you know, when you're with a group of people that are not like you.
Don't you feel, I often say when we're working with women, though, that men are trained on that from their earliest age. I mean, one of the things men do so well, and I think in large part it comes from a locker room mentality, but, you know, men in a meeting together will walk out the door afterwards and look at each other and say, man, did you screw that up?
Yeah.
And, you know, and they kind of laugh about it and they debrief what that means and then go out and have a beer together afterwards. And we as women have to, like, thoughtfully ask for, when we go in the meeting, will you give me some feedback afterwards, because I would really like to hear how I've done. And that's such a different dynamic when you think about that, when the natural tendency is there to just openly get it out there on the table versus this, we are so careful. And it's because of what you're saying, Becky.
And honestly, that's why the title of this book is Dare. Because, you know, as boys grow up, they're always daring each other to go do something. You know, they'll dare each other to jump off the roof of the garage, and then they fall and break their leg. They pat each other on the back and laugh about it. As women, we don't do that enough. We don't challenge and push each other to do more enough. And then if somebody does stick their neck out and takes a chance on something, I don't think we're as proactive as we need to be in going in and rescuing them.
Or rewarding.
And speaking up on their behalf. You know, the Girl Scouts has done some research that says that 57% of women will experience workplace bullying. And, you know, bullying doesn't just take place in high school. And I look back on my career,
and it doesn't just come from men.
Right. It doesn't just come from men. It comes from other women, too. And so we absolutely have got to be more proactive. If that's going to change, I think women have to make it change. And, you know, I wanted to write this book to say, I dare you to get out there and take more risk. And I dare you to get out there and do more to support women and help them be more successful.
But, you know, staying on the surprise vein, one of the things that's just so interesting to me, and we work with so many different organizations who are often at that point of saying, we know we need to do something to grow, develop, retain, and attract women in our organization. But so often the hand kind of comes up in the face, oh, but you need to understand our industry is different. And we all think that our industries are unbelievably unique, but in 1 week, we were working with a team with a large car dealership organization and working with a team with very high-end financial services. And it's always so striking to me that each of them will tell you, our industry is so completely different. It's very competitive. It's very difficult for women to move forward. It's very difficult to have balance. And it's sometimes... So, you know, in some respects, it's fun being in the catbird seat, being able to share those best practices across. And not that you want to diminish their understanding of their industry, but the issues really are the same. The issues are exactly the same.
You know, what's so funny is I have been all over the country talking about this book, and it never ceases to amaze me where I am. I bring up one story, and it's so universal, and all of the women and the men in the room will laugh about it because it's true. When a woman is sitting around a table and there's only maybe one or two women and it's mostly men, she'll say something and nobody hears her. Nobody jumps on it that it's a good idea. And then one of the men picks up on what she said and he repeats it. And everybody, oh, that is a great idea.
Fabulous.
And when I bring this story up, every woman in the room, her head is shaking and, you know, we're all laughing. And then, you know, I tell them that this continues to happen to me even now. I'm on the board of a large institution, and last month we had a strategic planning meeting. And they were talking about, you know, the industry of the future, and I asked them who they were comparing themselves with, and it was another company. And I said, well, why aren't you bringing in a futurist and having the futurist give you this feedback? And they said, oh, that is a really great idea. And who are some people? And then we started talking about some people they might bring in. At the end of the meeting, they're talking about, you know, checking off the good ideas. And they put up the good ideas, and they say, and then bringing in that futurist. Boy, Todd, that was a great idea. And I wanted to say, it was my idea.
Well, you
so
know,
even now that happens.
See, it's so interesting you say that.
And I was the only woman in that room that day.
To listeners, I mentioned that Dr. Tatum and Ingrid Saunders-Jones were having a conversation. Right. And this came up last night. And Ingrid was talking about it, and then – you know, as an aside, at the end, I heard a lot of other women saying, when she said that, I really could understand.
Oh, yeah.
So it's something that, you know, you see the heads nodding. And what she said she learned to do, which I thought was such great advice, is when it comes back around, she says very direct but in a nice way, I think that's something that I mentioned earlier. That might not have been the exact way she said it, but she said over time she got to a point where she decided she wasn't just going to continue to let that go. And she was going to, in a nice way, let people know that, you know, that was my idea. Not so much because she needed to take credit for it, but to help address this issue that you're talking about.
Gail Evans, former SVP at CNN, recommends you have a buddy in the room.
Yeah.
And even if you disagree, taking the opportunity to say, you know that point Michelle made a little while ago? I disagree with that, just to make sure you're elevating that that's a point that Michelle made.
Yeah. You know, we could go on all morning, and we were talking about that it goes by really quickly, and I feel like this has been such an energizing discussion. I hope both of you felt that same way. I know our listeners do, because as I said, I think you've given some really great things. So I want to give both of you a chance to make sure our listeners know how, Becky, they can get the book if they are interested in having you come speak, how they can do that, and Helene, how people can know if this is an area that they think that their organization needs some help in designing programs and helping women get into your mentoring program, that you both can share about that. So, Becky, tell us a little bit about how we can get the book and maybe even one or two things that you're getting ready to do with the book.
Sure. Well, first of all, what I want to do is say thank you to you and Helene, because you do an awful lot to support and help other women. And so I appreciate that, and just want to thank you and give you a pat on the back. The book is available on Amazon or on Borders. And so I tell people the easiest way to get it really is just to go online and order it. You can follow me on Twitter at Becky_Blaylock. I'm really trying to get my count up, so help me with that. And I am sharing a lot of great information with people every day. And I'm trying to announce where I'm going to be speaking if anybody is interested in coming. And I'm also on Facebook. But the most important thing is my website. And I think I mentioned that earlier, where you could go and take the confidence quiz. And then I have confidence tips on there.
And give us that address again.
And that's just BeckyBlaylock.com.
Okay.
Cool. So it's easy to remember. If you have my name, you've got that in there.
Yeah. And Helene, help us know how we can find out more about Path Builders and the great things you all are doing.
Sure. So we love working with organizations that recognize the value of moving women forward and really focusing on women at four key stages in their careers. You can certainly find us at pathbuilders.com, and we are relaunching our LinkedIn page as a company as well to be sharing some new insights there, which is a Pathbuilders page within LinkedIn. So look forward to the opportunity. I, too, want to appreciate Becky has really elevated a conversation here, and we are proud to be a part of that. And great working with you always, Michelle.
Yeah. One thing I'm just going to even ask on air is we got a chance to talk about a lot of things, but I know both of you are very involved in the community, and I would love maybe to have you both back to be able to maybe see how some of these principles can also help us from a community standpoint, because I know that both of you have a passion. So maybe we'll be able to coerce you both to come back a little bit later in the year and take these principles to another level, but also bring it and then that aspect. So my last question, because it's the way I close every show. Think back to your 20-year-old self. And if you could give your 20-year-old self some advice, Becky, what would you tell your 20-year-old self?
I would tell my 20-year-old self, be patient. Be more patient. Trust in the Lord. Things work out.
Great. Helene.
Wow, I would tell myself it just keeps getting better, that you have not seen the peak, and the things that frustrate you today won't matter so much in the future.
Excellent. Well, I hope both of you have a great Friday. Thank you so much for coming on our show. So join us next week, 10 o'clock, Fridays, at because we talk about growth because
growth matters.